Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. Tunisia's prime minister says 19 people, including tourists, were killed Wednesday when gunmen targeted visitors to the country's Bardo Museum. Two of the gunmen were also killed when security forces moved in to end the standoff. Among the dead are 17 tourists from Poland, Italy, Germany, and Spain. Two members of the security forces were also killed during that operation, according to the prime minister. At least 24 others were injured in the attack near Parliament. It remains unclear who the gunmen were. Tunisian television showed images of older tourists and children fleeing the scene under the cover of armed security forces. Relief workers are rushing emergency supplies to remote areas in Vanuatu. That's the South Pacific island nation that was pummeled last week by a powerful cyclone. Alex Smari with World Vision talks about how the population is coping.
People here, very resilient people, very self-sufficient people. And already we're seeing people, you know, clearing land, starting to replant, starting to construct temporary shelters and that. All they need is a bit of a helping hand.
Currently, there have been reports that some residents have resorted to drinking seawater. The UN humanitarian agency says at least 11 people are confirmed dead and warned the figure could rise. At least four police cars were set on fire and two officers injured Wednesday as authorities confronted violent anti-austerity protesters. It came ahead of inauguration ceremony for the European Central Bank's new headquarters in Frankfurt, Germany. This is VOA News. Iraqi troops and militias who pushed Islamic State fighters from the northern town of Amirli last September proceeded to loot and burn down homes and businesses, according to a new report released Wednesday by Human Rights Watch. Relying on interviews with victims and witnesses as well as satellite images, the reports say militiamen took items such as televisions, clothes, and electrical wiring before setting fire to the buildings. The looting and destructions extended to 47 villages around Amirli. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu wooed voters from the more right-wing parties for his resounding victory in Tuesday's parliamentary elections. VOA's Scott Bopp reports.
Supporters of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party celebrated as their leader proclaimed victory at the polls. He says, against all odds, we achieved a great victory for Likud. Official returns give the center-right Likud 30 seats in the parliament and 24 seats to the opposition Zionist Union led by labor leader Isaac Herzog. The margin makes it likely Mr. Netanyahu will be designated to form the next government. Scott Bobb, VOA News, Jerusalem.
A suicide car bomber attacked a government compound in Afghanistan's southern Helmand province Wednesday, killing at least 7 people and wounding 41 others. The complex in Lashkar Gah houses a governor as well as a head of the provincial council. A provincial government spokesman, Omar Zwak, and a local district governor, Haji Fatihullah, were among those wounded in the blast. Mr. Fatihullah says he was in a gathering inside the governor's compound when the blast happened and he became unconscious. He says that when he opened his eyes, he found himself in the hospital and doesn't know how many people were killed or wounded. Meanwhile, the Taliban has claimed responsibility for that attack. The Nigerian army says it has found no clues to the whereabouts of more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped last year by Boko Haram, despite the retaking of many towns from the militant group. The chief of army staff told reporters that the army is making inquiries about the girls in all those liberated areas. Sierra Leone's president has fired his vice president, Samuel Sam Samoana, who was recently kicked out of the ruling party on allegations that he was instigating violence and forming a new party. President Ernest Bai Koroma made the announcement Wednesday, saying that Sam Samoana had shown a willingness to abandon his duty and office. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama has arrived in Japan for a 3-day visit meant to highlight her global women's education initiative. She landed late Wednesday in the capital of Tokyo. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wu-Heben. Coming up at this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The tobacco industry is still a very strong concern, and they're also of concern to us because they continue very strongly to inhibit the efforts of countries to protect the health of their population.
That's a World Health Organization official who says the tobacco industry is filing many lawsuits to block anti-smoking efforts. Details coming up.
Also, the Nigerian Chief of Army Staff says the military has pushed Boko Haram rebels out of all areas it controlled in Yobe and Adamawa State.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Ghana, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Tunisia's prime minister says 19 people, including tourists, were killed today when gunmen targeted visitors to the country's Bardo Museum. Two of the gunmen were also killed when security forces moved in to end the standoff. Among the dead are 17 tourists from Poland, Italy, Germany, and Spain. Two members of the security forces were also killed during the operation, Prime Minister Habib Essid said during a press conference. At least 24 others were injured in the attack near Parliament. It remains unclear who the gunmen were. Tunisian television showed images of older tourists and children fleeing the scene under the cover of armed security forces. Member of Parliament Saida Unisi posted on Twitter as the Parliament building was evacuated, "We are not afraid." Unisi said the Minister of Justice, judges, and several army officials were inside the Parliament building during a session on the country's anti-terrorism law. Tunisian President Beji Said Essebsi was scheduled to address the country about the attacks later in the day.
Chief of Army Staff General Kenneth Minima says the Nigerian military has pushed Boko Haram rebels out of all areas the insurgents controlled in Yobe and Adamawa State. During a press conference today, General Minima said the insurgents now control only three local governorates in Borno State. He expressed hope government forces will free communities of Gwaza, Kalabaldi, and Abadam soon. However, the general did not speculate on whether those areas can be liberated in time for the March 28th national elections. Minima also said they have found no clues as to what happened to more than 200 girls Boko Haram abducted from a Chibok girls' boarding school a year ago. February elections were postponed because of insecurity in the three states in northeastern Nigeria, where thousands have died and an estimated 1.5 million have been displaced.
Boko Haram has been a central issue in the campaign in which former general and military ruler Muhammadu Buhari is challenging President Goodluck Jonathan. Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, and Niger launched a joint offensive against the group in January after the militants seized a multinational base on the shores of Lake Chad. Nigerian soldiers told VOA last week that soldiers from South Africa, Britain, and Ukraine are fighting alongside the army. Nigerian officials say the soldiers are training Nigerian troops on how to use newly purchased equipment.
The World Health Organization says non-smoking is becoming the new normal worldwide. But it warns legal battles are slowing efforts to dramatically reduce the use of tobacco products. The WHO released a new report today during the 16th World Conference on Tobacco or Health in Abu Dhabi. The WHO says tobacco use is declining while the number of non-smokers is on the rise. The Global Report on Trends in Tobacco Smoking says in 2010, there were nearly 4 billion non-smokers age 15, and if current trends continue, the figure could rise to 5 billion by 2025. That would be 81% of the population, 15 and older. Edward Tarsan Despenyai, is WHO's Coordinator of Comprehensive Information Systems for Tobacco Control. From Abu Dhabi, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapawa about the decline in smokers.
There is no doubt that the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, the only health treaty about any health issues that has been negotiated by the WHO and which has now been in place for 10 years, is starting to have a good impact on the tobacco epidemic, although we still have a long, long way to go because the tobacco industry is still a very strong concern. And they're also of concern to us because they continue very strongly to inhibit the efforts of countries to protect the health of their populations.
I want to ask you more about the tobacco industry lawsuits in a moment. But regarding the treaty, what specifically in the treaty is contributing to the decline in the use of tobacco?
The very fact that the treaty itself exists means that there are more conversations about tobacco in the world. There are more people who are aware of the treaty. But specifically, what countries have been doing are some very, very strong measures, such as, for example, raising taxes. There are still many countries that still have to raise taxes, but there are enough countries that are now starting to raise taxes to protect people against tobacco smoke by having, for example, restaurants free from tobacco smoke, public transport free from tobacco smoke, university campuses, health campuses. So these are some of the examples, as well as a ban on the promotion and the sponsorship of sports and the arts, where it has been done to stop the tobacco industry from blatantly trying to influence young people and adults in keeping on smoking. And also in those countries where it is not just about smoking, but also about smokeless tobacco. We still have more to do on smokeless tobacco. In those countries where smokeless tobacco is important, but at least on the area of tobacco smoking, we seem to be making some headway.
Now, WHO Director General Dr. Margaret Chan is quoted as saying, in an ominous trend in some countries, the battle between tobacco and health has moved into the courts. Would you explain?
Well, she was referring to the court cases that the tobacco industry has brought against, for example, Uruguay, who is trying to have warnings on their packet of cigarettes as they would like it to be, but the tobacco industry is taking Uruguay to court. In the same way that the tobacco industry has took Australia to court and lost the case in the High Court of Australia, the tobacco industry is funding some other countries to have disputes with Australia in the world trade arena. So these are very important cases, because we in WHO, we cannot afford to lose those cases. So it's a battle to the death, I would think, between us and the tobacco industry. We think that we will prevail. I think we think that Australia will prevail. But in the meantime, the tobacco industry prolongs those battles and warns other countries that they too will face prolonged court cases, which for some low and middle income countries looks very dangerous for them to go there. So they get intimidated by those lawsuits and therefore they do not take the actions that they should take. But we must say that most of the lawsuits that the tobacco industry have taken, they have lost those lawsuits. And now in terms of plain packaging, which is what Australia was putting in place, we see that Ireland has followed suit. The United Kingdom is following suit. Turkey is following suit. South Africa, the Minister for Health of South Africa today said that they were also going to follow suit.
Now, I understand the conference is also focusing on tobacco control and non-communicable diseases. Is that correct?
By this, we mean cancers and heart disease and respiratory diseases and also diabetes. Now, all four of those diseases are made worse by tobacco. And so for this conference, it was bringing those two issues together.
Edward Tersan Despenyai is WHO's Coordinator of Comprehensive Information Systems for Tobacco Control. From Abu Dhabi, he spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
The UN Ebola Emergency Mission says a chain of new infections in Guinea is a major setback for the nation's efforts to reach zero new Ebola cases. A spokesperson says weak surveillance in some areas of the country has led to a spike in new infections from 8 to 21 cases each day. New cases have risen for the past 3 weeks. The chain of new infections is linked to the improper burning of the body of a woman who died of the virus. Three of the newly infected are doctors who worked at Ignacio Dean Hospital in Conakry. Guinea's anti-Ebola task force coordinator, Sakoba Keita, says new measures are being taken to regulate movement of corpses and to trace those who have been in contact with infected people. In other Ebola news, four more American health workers have been evacuated from Sierra Leone for observation in the United States. That brings the number of evacuees from that country to 15 in the last 6 days. One is in critical condition at the U.S. National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Another has shown symptoms of the disease and is in a biocontainment unit at the Nebraska Medical Center. All others are being isolated and monitored for 21 days. All 15 were working with Partners in Health, a Boston-based nonprofit health delivery program that began Ebola projects in Sierra Leone and Liberia in November.
As the rate of Ebola infections reached zero, the Liberian government recently reopened its borders. Despite the good news, many people remain concerned the deadly virus might slip back into Liberia from neighboring Sierra Leone and Guinea, which are not yet Ebola-free. This is true for people in Liberia's northern Lofa County, which was devastated by Ebola. But the head of Liberia's Ebola response, Tolbert Nyanswa, says his team will do everything to keep the country safe. Benno Mutchler reports.
In northern Liberia, near the borders with Sierra Leone and Guinea, is the city of Foya. Resident Fiya Sa sits under a palava hut and prepares his breakfast.
We are actually coping on farm because we have gone for more than 100 plus days. We have not heard of any new Ebola case in Foya and Lofa County at last.
Sa says he feels very happy that the crisis is almost over. People who fled when Ebola killed more than 40 in the district are returning. And when borders reopened, many residents resumed their daily business as cross-border traders. However, he says he and other residents fear Ebola might come back and doubt the government's surveillance measures at the borders.
So the border has been open. Presently, we are nervous. We are very much skeptical because if you went at the borders with Guinea and Sierra Leone, we have not actually seen some of the protocols, some of the Ebola preventive measures being put into place.
In Monrovia, Deputy Health Minister Tolbert Nyanswa, who leads Liberia's Ebola response, says the surveillance system in place is good. While risks remain, his team is monitoring the situation closely and will be immediately on the ground in case of a new outbreak.
We have not stopped meeting. Our incident management system team is still intact. We're still having our regular operational meeting, looking at the situation on every single day, 24/7.
Nyanswa says Liberia's health facilities are now stronger on infection prevention and control. In Monrovia and Monserrate County, that were for weeks the Ebola epicenter in West Africa, the government still works with about 4,000 case finders who check on households on a daily basis. At the borders, health workers try to raise awareness and establish a system where citizens immediately report back to them or their community leaders in case anybody shows symptoms of Ebola.
The new strategy is to follow up people coming across the border, strangers. We're making sure that the captive case finders are checking union stations where vehicles bringing people into Liberia, doing active case finding and event-based case finding. In case there's an event reported, we can jump on that. So event-based and active case finding are complementing each other to keep Liberians and Liberia safe of Ebola.
About 10,000 people died of Ebola in West Africa, 4,000 in Liberia. Deputy Minister Nyanswa says even if Liberia is officially Ebola-free, his team will remain on the watch until the situation in the neighboring countries is also solved. Benno Mutchler for VOA News, Monrovia.
20 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, Sierra Leone's president has fired his vice president, Samuel Sam Sumana. He was recently kicked out of the ruling party on allegations he was instigating violence and forming a new party. President Ernest Bai Koroma made the announcement today. He said Sam Sumana has shown a willingness to abandon his duties and office. The vice president sought asylum at the U.S. Embassy in Freetown Saturday, but later returned home. Sam Sumana had recently been under self-imposed quarantine because of possible exposure to Ebola, which remains an ongoing problem in Sierra Leone. His quarantine period officially ended on Tuesday. As the 59th session of the Commission on the Status of Women continues at UN headquarters in New York, women's rights and gender advocates have brought a variety of strong voices from around the world to the high-level international forum. One of them is Abigail Mulea. She's the monitoring and evaluation officer for Zubo Trust, an NGO supporting women and girls in the Zambezi Valley, one of the poorest regions in Zimbabwe. She explains how the efforts of her organization have helped bring gender equality to rural women in the fishing industry.
The community where I stay is mostly a rural community. And then the challenges that most young women face and girls is mostly access to natural resources that enhance their economic empowerment. For instance, I'll cite an example. In 2010, when we started operating and being a district, we had a challenge where women were not allowed to fish alongside men. And then we embarked on an advocacy exercise with the women affected. And eventually we had the women fishing alongside men. So to us, if such things exist in our community, it means it excludes women from projects that will make them develop. And then it will affect the education of the girl child, and also it will affect even the development of their communities.
How do you help women overcome these types of cultural barriers that they deal with on a daily basis?
Our approach as an organization is to bring women together and so that they start talking about the challenges that affect them. Our starting point is we have women realizing that there is a gap. By coming together, discussing, they come to a point where they agree that there is a gap that needs attention. And then they come up with possible solutions on how they are going to come out of this situation. Then our role as an organization is to facilitate the process of how they are going to fight these injustices. For example, in particular, the fishing project, we realized that there were cultural barriers where the chiefs would say it's a taboo, we can't have women fishing alongside men. We engaged the chiefs together with the women affected and made them realize that what he was considering a taboo was nothing, it's just a social construct. And then later on, he understood. And then also the other social barrier was the men that would say, we can't have women being breadwinners, leaving us behind to fend for the family. So the other strategy that we used was to engage and partner with a men-only organization that's focusing on women's rights issues called PADARE. And they came and capacitated these men and made them realize that gender equality was key for the development of their communities. So to us, it's a process. You know, when you are changing a tradition, something that people have been living with for a long time, it's not a once-off event. It's a back-and-forth process. And then eventually when people come to a point where they understand what you're talking about, you get a buy-in from them.
So you do see some strides. You're making strides. You have success stories to share. And there at the conference, what do you hope the biggest takeaway will be for you?
The greatest achievement we have is what we started as livelihood projects as an organization, because our main target was economically empower women and develop their communities, which are livelihood projects. Later on emerged as an education project because men were aware of the importance of gender equality. Women were aware of issues around value addition. And then women were able to send their children to school. And then that's an education project. It also became a nutrition project because we have some of the projects that we are running. It became a health project, actually, where we have women producing something like baobab juice and feeding the preschools and the urge to boost their nutrition. And it also became an environment Environment Management Project, where we have women as advocates for sustainable utilization of natural resources, such as Ilala palm tree and Kapenda field. So to me, my biggest takeaway from the conference will be how best to scale up such community-led projects in the bid to not only improve the livelihood of the communities that we're working with, but also to touch all these aspects, deal even with the cultural challenges that we face as we do our work, and also to create space for the girl child and the young woman in the future.
That was Abigail Malaya. She's the Monitoring and Evaluation Officer for Zubo Trust, a Zimbabwean NGO that works for the advancement of women and girls. She spoke with me from the UN Women's Conference in New York.
A senior UN official said yesterday the situation in Sudan's Darfur region has not improved over the past year. The official added that continuing violence has displaced people at the highest rate since the crisis peaked in 2004. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir reports, it's against this backdrop that the UN Security Council must decide the future of one of its biggest peacekeeping missions.
Nearly 16,000 peacekeepers and police form the UN African Union hybrid mission known as UNAMID. The mission keeps watch over the massive Darfur region where rebels have been fighting the Sudanese government for 12 years. At a cost of over $1.1 billion a year to run, UNAMID is consuming a huge amount of resources, but by the UN's own assessment, is falling short of fulfilling its mandate of protecting civilians and stabilizing Darfur. The government of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, himself wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes against humanity committed in Darfur, has undermined the mission, restricting movement of patrols and access of humanitarian workers. Armed groups have also presented challenges, and the mission also has problems from within, working with often poorly equipped and trained soldiers. While trying to carry out their mission, UNAMID personnel have been threatened, harassed, abducted, and attacked. Since the force was deployed in 2007, 215 peacekeepers have been killed. UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladsous told the Security Council Tuesday that there has been no tangible progress toward resolution of the conflict. He said the security and humanitarian situations have deteriorated significantly over the past year as fighting between Sudanese government forces and armed groups has risen.
We estimate that it is no less than 450,000 people that were displaced over the year as a result of the violence, which is the highest volume in any single year since the peak of the conflict in 2004.
He said of the newly displaced, at least 300,000 remain homeless, most in camps, bringing to more than 2.5 million the overall number of displaced Darfuris. Meanwhile, the government of Sudan has asked the UN and African Union to begin developing an exit strategy for the mission. Ladsous said discussions began Tuesday among the parties to draw up a roadmap for UNAMID's gradual drawdown.
We have presently in Khartoum a team to start a working group which will look at the process for the exit of UNAMID eventually. But of course, all that has to be the subject of benchmarks and appropriate attention, because there is still a lot of work to be done inside Darfur.
The working group is expected to complete the roadmap by April, after which the Security Council and the African Union Peace and Security Council will consider its recommendations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th for a landmark election. What happens there matters throughout Africa. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. VOA reporters are in Nigeria and surrounding countries covering the campaigns and the issues and counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. a commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Tunisia's prime minister says 19 people, including tourists, were killed today when gunmen targeted visitors to the country's Bardo Museum. And Nigeria's chief of army staff says the military has pushed Boko Haram rebels out of all areas the insurgents controlled in Yobe and Adamawa State. Coming up, music from Ghana, and in our feature segment, scrambling to find ways that will allow approximately 1 million people displaced by Boko Haram related to violence to vote in Nigeria's March elections. I'm Kim Lewis with Yahya Swuhid, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand South African cricket fans have reason to cheer.
Kim, South Africa is celebrating one of its greatest ever cricket victories. The Proteas of South Africa scored a dominant 9-wicket victory over Sri Lanka Wednesday in Sydney, Australia, to advance for the first time to the semifinals of the Cricket World Cup. The South Africans will play either New Zealand or the West Indies in a semifinal match March 24th in Auckland. On Wednesday in Sydney, the South Africans dismissed Sri Lanka for 133 and then took just 18 overs to knock off the runs for the loss of 1 wicket. The captain of the Proteas, A.B. de Villiers, praised his spinners for the way they bowled to the Sri Lankans, who are one of the better batting sides against spin. South Africa's Pakistan-born spinner Imran Tahir claimed 4 wickets for 26, mowed down Sri Lanka's middle order, and was named man of the match. And J.P. Dumini recorded a hat trick for the South Africans. Captain A.B. de Villiers says it's one of South Africa's top performances.
It's up there with one of the best I've seen. Look, we've done some amazing things with the ball in hand before. I won't say it's the best, but definitely the most important performance in the most important game to date. So very proud of the way the guys stepped up to the plate, the way Dale and Carl started off, and then Morne, who followed with a lot of heat, and then obviously the two spinners. Yeah, we just worked really well together as a bowling unit today, and the field has backed it up exceptionally well.
In reaching the Cricket World Cup semifinals for the first time, South Africa's captain was asked about descriptions of the team as choking on big occasions. De Villiers says he doesn't mind the label, and the Proteas have a great attitude ahead of the semifinals.
I truly believe that we feel really strong as a unit and confident going into the semifinals. It, in the other side, well, in another breath, it means absolutely nothing. You're going to have to start over again. And the hard work starts now. Look, we didn't come all this way to just say that we made it to a semifinals of the World Cup. We want to go all the way. We came here to win the World Cup. So our next hurdle is the semifinals, and we'll try and find a way to get over that hurdle. But look, So I've still got hopefully 2 games to go. We haven't won the World Cup yet.
The Cricket World Cup continues on Thursday when neighbors India and Bangladesh battle in Melbourne, Australia. This cracker of a cricket quarterfinal is expected to draw a television viewing audience of more than 1 billion people in the South Asia region. On Friday, Australia will host Pakistan in the third quarterfinal in Adelaide. And on Saturday, New Zealand will host the West Indies in the capital, Wellington, with the winner of that match, as I mentioned, advancing to play South Africa on March 24th in Auckland, New Zealand. The other semifinal will be played March 26th in Sydney, Australia, and the Cricket World Cup final will be March 29th in Melbourne, Australia.
Voice of America!
If you were to talk to us from the deepest, bitter part of the bottom of your heart, Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you later Wednesday night at 18:30 UTC with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. Our African football guru, David Legg, has been looking at the recent action in the CAF Champions League and CAF Confederation Cup club competitions. We're in the last 32 stage in both tournaments. This evening, David's focus is the Confederation Cup, and in running down the results, he says a couple of Malian clubs were victorious at home.
Anse Couture of Mali, 2, Sahel of Niger, 1, Africa of Ivory Coast, 1, Ittihad of Libya, 1, Djeliba of Mali, 2, Petrojet of Egypt, 1, Hearts of Oak of Ghana, 2, Olympic N'Gour of Senegal, 1. Roya of Guinea, 1. Clef of Algeria, 0. Club Africain versus Dolphins. That match was not played because the Dolphins team arrived late. And although it has not been officially confirmed by CAF, it's pretty well taken for granted that Club Africain will be awarded a walkover. Better news for the other Nigerian club, Wari Wolves of Nigeria, 2. Dedabit of Ethiopia, 0. Afni Shendi of Sudan, 2. Etan Chieti of DR Congo, 1. Zamalek of Egypt, 3. Rayon Sports of Rwanda, 1. Fuzrabat of Morocco, 3. Port of Togo, 0. Munama of Gabon, 4. Power Dynamos of Zambia, 0. Orlando Pirates of South Africa, 2. Revenue Authority of Uganda, 1. Young Africans of Tanzania, 5. Platinum of Zimbabwe, 1. Etoile Sahel of Tunisia, 1. Benfica Luanda of Angola, 0. Royal Leopard of Swaziland, 2. Petro Atletico of Angola, 2. And V Club of DR Congo, 3. Ferroviario Beira of Mozambique, 0. As I look through these results, Sunny, starting at the top, AFIC, one would have expected them to win at home to Ittihad. A second-half goal from Mohamed, giving the Libyans a 1-1 draw there. Hearts of Oak of Ghana, similarly to Ashanti Kotoko, a side that have fallen on hard times. In 2000, where the African champions, they had to come from behind, and a late goal gave them a 2-1 home victory over N'Gour. Well done to Wari Wolves, a goal in each half, giving them a 2-0 lead over Dedabit of Ethiopia. And I'm confident that the Wolves will qualify for the draw of the last 16. Zamalek of Egypt playing their first match since that tragic situation last month in Cairo, where 20 of their supporters were killed. Basically, the Zamalek supporters were trying to gain entry to the ground in Cairo. The police were refusing to let them in. Birdshot and tear gas were fired. There was a stampede, and the net result, 20 fatalities. Zamalek, in remembrance of that, they wore shirts that had Remember 20 emblazoned across the front. A very fitting tribute to those fallen fans. Zamalek winning by 3-1, and the veteran Ahmed Aid scoring 2 of those goals. Big win for Fuzrabat of Morocco, 3-0 over Port of Togo. And a very impressive performance by Munana of Gabon, hammering the Zambians, Power Dynamos, 4-0. That is 12 goals, Sonny, now in 3 matches for the Gabonese. So they're clearly a side to watch. And barring a absolute collapse in a return match, they seem to be guaranteed to advance. Orlando Pirates were sitting pretty with a 2-goal lead going into stoppage time in Soweto against the Ugandan Revenue Authority, but then an own goal from Happy Jele 3 minutes into stoppage time halved that deficit, and no doubt in Kampala tonight, the Ugandans are dreaming of winning that return match and knocking out the former African champions, Orlando Pirates. talking of former champions, the 12 Sahel, the only club that has won every CAF club competition. But they're taking a slender lead on the long trip south to Angola. They beat Benfica Luanda by just 1-0. Roy Leppert, as we mentioned on the previous show, pulled off an absolute sensation by knocking out Wits of South Africa. They won the return match 3-0 and then won the penalty shootout. But I found Petro of Angola tough opposition. In fact, the Angolans took the lead. Then the Swazis went 2-1 in front. And then the Angolans equalized. So it's all square there at 2-2. One would have to say that the balance is now tilted in favor of Petro Atletico ahead of the return match in Luanda. And aside, Sonny, I feel are one of the favorites for the Confederation Cup this year, V Club of DR Congo. Runners-up last year in the Champions League, an impressive side. They have lost a couple of their top players to CS Sfaxien of Tunisia, but nevertheless, an impressive 3-0 home victory over Ferroviario Beira of Mozambique. And Mubele, who was one of the leading scorers in the Champions League last year, he scored after just 30 seconds and ended with a brace.
David, who are the leading scorers in the Confed Cup?
Unlike the Champions League, Sonny, plenty of sharpshooters in the Confederations Cup. And the man who's out in front is Amberoot of Munana of Gabon. We mentioned that they've scored 12 goals, and he has grabbed 5 of them. Then quite a few players, Sonny, with 3 goals each, including Ngasa and Tambwe, who both play for Young Africans in Tanzania. Boyogi, who plays for Munana. So between him and Amarush, that's 8 of the 12 goals. We have Bushnaf of Itihad of Libya, also on 3. Also on 3 is Fakadu of Dedebit of Ethiopia. Komlan from Port of Togo. Mabululu from Petro of Angola. C of Fasal in Liberia, and Sentongo of Revenue Authority of Uganda. Now, Sentongo, he was suspended for the first match against Pirates and could well be back for the return game. So that's an added threat to the Soweto club. So all in all, Sonny, it's going to be a tough second leg for those South Africans in Kampala.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. David mentioned that deadly stampede in Cairo last month that killed 20 football fans. In the wake of the violence, Egyptian authorities decided to suspend play in the domestic league. A quick update now. Matches will resume from March 30th in closed stadiums without fans. Once again, closed stadiums without fans. The decision was reached Wednesday during a government cabinet meeting that included the Interior Ministry, the Youth and Sports Ministry, as well as the Egyptian Football Association. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, scrambling to find ways that will allow approximately 1 million people displaced by Boko Haram-related violence to vote in Nigeria's March elections. And next, commemorating the 50th anniversary of a historic voting rights march in the U.S. But first, some music. Here is Ghana's Joel with One Man Down.
Used to cruise me around in your car, but thank God I got my own home. And I thank you for that, I thank you for that. So why you the envy? Used to pay my bills before, but now I they pay for two. And I thank you for that, I thank you for that. Brother man, still the envy. Unya yanka, that they be an out in it, sa pay any ball. But man no be God, man no be God. Stop all the hating. Lie, lie, man just be man, so you never know why. My destiny changing, I'm living so high. Make you no envy my son, be God where they bless me. Go shots. One man down, on to the next one. Oh yeah, no gaba. Another man down, oh yeah, no turning back. Go shots. One man down, oh yeah, no gaba. Another man down, oh yeah, no turning back. fellas, they blame my song. The fellas be loving, they hailing my song. The ladies, they dancing, they using my song for their ringtone. You never thought about that. No, I'm staying on top forever. Whether you short or you tall, rich or you poor, time keeps changing for better. And you can't do nothing about it. Another man rain of fighting. Because you know be God, and you never saw me past God. Kadawani, no one on yabala man. It does it when it feels just right. Don't you say it's never my type. So make you know they look down on another brother man. Ha. Let go. Gunshots.
One man down, on to the next man. Oh yeah, no gaba. Another man down, oh yeah, no turning back.
Gunshots.
One man down, oh yeah, no gaba.
Said I would shrivel, said I'd be dead if I ever try to whistle. But hey, who said it was simple? The feds take your bread so you wouldn't make a nickel. You mean I couldn't pick a pickle? Pick words when I could've picked a pistol. A sick verse, the NSL's got a sickle. Blowing all up in your face like a pimple. Now he said, she said he ain't hit. And if he ain't hit, that's cause he ain't rich. And if he ain't rich, check who he came with. I don't play with this, he say and she say, shh, get off my.
One man crown, another man frown. Why? Because them want you down. They say one man crown, and another man frown. Why? Because them want you down. But guess what?
Gunshots.
One man down, on to the next one. Oh yeah, no gaba. Hey, another man down. Oh yeah, no turning back.
Gunshots.
One man down. Oh yeah, no gaba.
Without face to this strong. God bless you all for the support.
Ghana's Joel with One Man Down.
Well, Nigeria's Electoral Commission is scrambling to find ways that will allow approximately 1 million people displaced by Boko Haram-related violence to vote in March elections. VOA West Africa correspondent Anne Look reports.
Nigeria's Independent Electoral Commission says voters displaced by fighting in Borno, Yobe, and Adamawa states can pick up their voter cards at designated centers and IDP camps, many of them located in the state capitals. Those locations are also where displaced voters will be able to cast their ballots. That means tens of thousands of IDPs who have fled further south must make their way back. One from Borno State named Buba Musa traveled from Bauchi to Maiduguri this week to get his voter card. He is from Gwoza, which fell to Boko Haram in August.
Unfortunately, I got my own and my wife's own. I didn't find it. And other people are still murmuring. They do not get anything concerning that voter's card.
Musa must now either stay in Maiduguri or return next month if he wants to vote. There will be no polling in Gwoza or other high-risk areas. Election Commission spokesman Nick DeZang says it's too dangerous for electoral staff, and most civilians have fled areas occupied by Boko Haram.
The security agencies have assured us of their capacity to secure the camps and to secure the areas around the camps to enable people, you know, cast their vote on election day.
He said it's not a perfect solution, but it is realistic, considering the time they have. Refugees are another issue. Nigerian law does not allow diaspora voting, so people who fled to Niger, Chad, or Cameroon must return to their home states to pick up voter cards and cast ballots. Security may be an issue, as Boko Haram controls large swaths of territory in the northeast, especially in the border areas. Disenfranchisement could have political implications. The northeast is a stronghold of the political opposition, the APC. Borno State Governor and APC member Kashim Shettima told VOA the state has disbursed about $50,000 to transport Borno State refugees from Cameroon to Maiduguri. He said arrangements are also being made to bus voters back from Niger.
It's not a partisan issue, it's a rights issue. And no one is doing us a favor by conducting elections in Borno, Yobe and Adamawa. It's our right to vote and be voted for.
If three states are effectively disenfranchised, losing parties would have grounds for challenging and perhaps even overturning the election results. Dezang says the door on that risk of, quote, constitutional crisis remains ajar.
We are very concerned about that because by law, you know, if, for example, you are contesting for the presidency, you are supposed to get at least one quarter of the votes in two-thirds of the states of the federation. So these states are crucial to any presidential election.
Getting displaced Northeasterners to vote is just one piece of the logistical puzzle ahead. By law, Nigeria has until April to hold the polls. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
U.S. President Barack Obama and thousands of people recently gathered in Selma, Alabama, to commemorate the 50th anniversary of a historic voting rights march that became known as Bloody Sunday. VOA's Chris Simpkins traveled to Alabama and introduces us to some of the foot soldiers of the voting rights struggles of the 1960s.
What about now better jobs? What about better training, schooling?
Kevin Say is a business owner trying to make it through tough economic times in Selma. He and his wife opened a clothing and accessory store last year and are making money.
And if Selma is growing in the right way, then we can have the greatest expansion that anybody could ever look for.
But many black-owned businesses were forced to close during the economic downturn 7 years ago. The closed stores and boarded-up buildings indicate the area lacks job opportunities, even though the institutional segregation of five decades ago is a thing of the past. Longtime Alabama State Senator Hank Sanders says it's tragic a worldwide symbol of the civil rights struggle has not prospered.
The economic and the political didn't come together in Selma to produce the desired results. Selma now needs the harvest. It is planted, but it needs the harvest.
Unemployment for young blacks here is more than 20%, and some families live in government-subsidized housing as they did 50 years ago. Selma radio station owner Glenn King is pushing economic development by supporting black-owned businesses. He says if every black business added one employee, it would reduce black unemployment to levels of whites.
I've encouraged blacks that together we stand and divided we fall. These two black young men is trying to make it better and show blacks what they can do if they invest in something in their community.
I believe we are a lot better now, clearly, than we were before. I believe our biggest issue now is a polarization due to the economics issues of today, more so than it is because of race.
Cromwell Handy is the pastor of the Reverend Martin Luther King's historic church in Montgomery. He says African Americans can fulfill Dr. King's dream by demanding income equality.
We must forward march. We must stay away from what we know from a military term, marking time. We can't march in place and just focus on the past. We have to forward march from here for a better nation and a better world.
In order to move on, we got to know the history so we want to make the same skate and keep their fight living on.
Birmingham Mayor William Bell believes blacks can create or generate economic opportunities by staying involved in the political process.
To protect those opportunities, you've got to fully participate. You've got to be a full-fledged citizen. And that right to vote is critical to economic power, is critical to social power, is critical to cultural power.
In Selma, Kevin Say wants to help fellow entrepreneurs. Someday he hopes to hire more workers, giving something back to the community.
Now you're starting to see more blacks are coming together to help one another, because I feel if one can make it, the next one can make it. If I can get started, then something I can do can probably pull you and help you along the way.
Community leaders believe by working together, they can bring about better financial times for this community that was so pivotal to the civil rights movement. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Selma, Alabama.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a further sign of the United States' determination to help the nations of Africa combat terrorism, millions of dollars in rewards are being offered for information on three more leaders of the al-Qaeda-linked Somalia-based terrorist organization Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, or al-Shabab. The men are Yasin Kilwe, Abdikader Mohammed Abdikader, also known as Ikrima, and Jafar, also known as Amar. The group, listed as a foreign terrorist organization since 2008, has control of large areas of southern and central Somalia and is responsible for the death of thousands of Somali citizens, peace activists, international aid workers, journalists, and civilians, as well as African Union peacekeepers who are helping to restore stability and prosperity to the region. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes amid the fighting. Since 2006, al-Shabaab is engaged in a campaign of violence, including bombings and suicide attacks, which has killed thousands. In July 2010, it planned and executed a bomb attack in Kampala, Uganda, that killed more than 70 people, including an American citizen. Yasin Kilwe is al-Shabaab's leader in the Puntland region of Somalia. He pledged his allegiance to al-Qaeda in February 2012. Abdikader, 34 years old, was born in Kenya of Somali parents. He has coordinated recruitment of Kenyan youth into al-Shabaab and commanded a force of Kenyan fighters operating in Somalia. He reportedly has medium-length hair, a thick mustache, and is missing three fingers on his left hand. Jafar has served as Abdikader's deputy and reportedly is missing one eye. If you have information on any of these men, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy. Submit a tip through the RFJ website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. The United States guarantees that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the United States is prepared to protect informants by relocating them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, land reform. Despite the end of colonial rule and apartheid, vast amounts of land in Zimbabwe and South Africa and other regions on the continent are not being redistributed fairly and efficiently. We'll discuss this issue next time on VOA Africa.
Nigeria heads to the polls March 28th for a landmark election. What happens there matters throughout Africa.
turn to Voice of America for the facts. VOA reporters are in Nigeria and surrounding countries covering the campaigns and the issues and counting down to the March 28th election and beyond. Special Nigeria Decides 2015 coverage is underway now. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.